Vin shook her head. I'm more in control than I have been for months. It's time for me to stop hesitating, Sazed. Time to stop worrying. Time to accept my place in this crew. I know what I want now. I love Elend. I don't know what kind of time we'll have together, but I want some, at least. Sazed sat for a moment, then returned to his sewing. And you, Lord Elend? What are your thoughts? What were his thoughts? He remembered just the day before, when Vin had spoken of leaving and the wrenching he had felt. He thought of how much he depended on her wisdom, and her bluntness, and her simple, but not simplistic, devotion to him. Yes, he did love her. The world had gone chaotic recently. He had made mistakes. Yet despite everything that had happened, and despite his frustrations, he still felt strongly that he wanted to be with Vin. It wasn't the idyllic infatuation he'd felt a year and a half ago at the parties, but it felt more solid. Yes, Sazed, he said. I do want to marry her. I have wanted it for some time. I don't know what's going to happen to the city or my kingdom, but I want to be with Vin when it comes. Sazed continued to work. Very well, then, he finally said. If it is my witness you require, then you have it. Elend knelt, still pressing the cloth on Vin's shoulder, feeling a little bit stunned. That's it, then? Sazed nodded. It is as valid as any witness the obligators could give you, I think. Be warned. The Lasta love oath is binding. They knew no form of divorce in their culture. Do you accept my witness of this event? Vin nodded. Elend felt himself doing the same. Then you are married, Sazed said, tying off his thread, then draping a cloth across Vin's chest. Hold this for a bit, Lady Vin, and staunch the rest of the bleeding. Then he moved on to her cheek. I feel like there should be a ceremony or something, Elend said.
I could give you one, if you wish, Sazed said. But I do not think you need one. I have known you both for some time, and am willing to give my blessing to this union. I simply offer counsel. Those who take lightly promises they make to those they love are people who find little lasting satisfaction in life. This is not an easy time in which to live. That does not mean that it has to be a difficult time to love. But it does mean that you will find unusual stresses upon your lives and your relationship. Do not forget the love oath you made to each other this evening. It will give you much strength in the days to come, I think. With that, he pulled the last stitch tight on Vin's face, then finally moved to the shoulder. The bleeding there had mostly stopped, and Sazed studied the wound for a moment before beginning work on it. Vin looked up at Elend, smiling, looking a bit drowsy. He stood and walked over to the room's wash basin and returned with a damp cloth to wipe off her face and cheek.
I'm sorry, she said quietly, as Sazed moved around and took the place Elend had been kneeling in.
Sorry, Elend said. About my father's mistborn? Vin shook her head.
No. For taking so long.
Elend smiled. You're worth the wait. Besides, I think I had to figure a few things out as well.
Like how to be a king?
And how to stop being one. Vin shook her head.
You never stopped being one, Elend. They can take your crown, but they can't take your honor.
Elend smiled. Thank you. However, I don't know how much good I've done the city. By even being here, I've divided the people, and now Straff will end up in control.
I'll kill Straff if he puts one foot in this city.
Elend gritted his teeth. Back to the same problems again. They could only hold Vin's knife against his neck for so long. He'd figure out a way to wiggle around, and there was always Jastes and those Kolos.
Your Majesty, Sazed said as he worked, perhaps I can offer a solution.
Elend glanced down at the terraceman, raising an eyebrow.
The Well of Ascension, Sazed said.
Vin opened her eyes immediately.
Tyndall and I have been researching the Hero of Ages, Sazed continued. We are convinced that Rashik never did what the hero was supposed to. In fact, we aren't even convinced that this Elendi of 1,000 years ago was the hero. There are too many discrepancies, too many problems and contradictions. In addition, the mists, the deepness, are still here. And now they are killing people.
Elend frowned. What are you saying? Sazed pulled a stitch tight.
Something still needs to be done, Your Majesty. Something important. Looking at it from a smaller perspective, it might seem that the events at Luthadel and the rise of the Well of Ascension are unrelated. However, from a larger view, they may be solutions to one another.
Elend smiled. Like the lock and the key.
Yes, Your Majesty, Sazed said, smiling. Precisely like that.
It thumps, Vin whispered, eyes closing. In my head. I can feel it.
Sazed paused, then wrapped a bandage around Vin's arm.
Can you feel where it is?
Vin shook her head.
There doesn't seem to be a direction to the pulses. I thought they were distant, but they're getting louder.
That must be the well returning to power, Sazed said. It is fortunate that I know where to find it.
Elend turned, and Vin opened her eyes again.
My research has revealed the location, Lady Vin, Sazed said. I can draw you a map from my metal mines.
Where?
Vin whispered.
North, Sazed said.
In the mountains of Terrace, atop one of the lower peaks, known as Deratatith. Travel there will be difficult this time of year.
I can do it,
Vin said firmly as Sazed turned to working on her chest wound. Elend flushed again, then paused as he turned away.
I'm married.
You're going to leave? Elend asked, looking to Vin. Now?
I have to, Vin whispered. I have to go to it, Elend.
You should go with her, Your Majesty, Sazed said.
What?
Sazed sighed, looking up. We have to face facts, Your Majesty. As you said earlier, Straff will soon take this city. If you are here, you will be executed. However, Lady Vin will undoubtedly need help securing the well.
It's supposed to hold great power, Elend said, rubbing his chin. Could we, you think, destroy those armies? Vin shook her head.
We couldn't use it, she whispered. The power is a temptation. That's what went wrong last time. Rashik took the power instead of giving it up.
Giving it up? Elend asked. What does that mean?
Letting it go. Your Majesty, Sazed said, letting it defeat the deepness on its own. Trust, Vin whispered. It's about trust.
However, Sazed said, I think that releasing this power could do great things for the land, change things, and undo much of the damage the Lord Ruler did. I have a strong suspicion that it would destroy the Kolos, since they were created by the Lord Ruler's misuse of the power.
But Straff would hold the city, Elend said.
Yes, Sazed said. But if you leave, the transition will be peaceful. The Assembly has all but decided to accept him as their emperor, and it appears that he'll let Penrod rule as a subject king. There will be no bloodshed, and you will be able to organize resistance from outside. Besides, who knows what releasing the power will do? Lady Vin could be left changed, much as the Lord Ruler was. With the crew in hiding within the city, it should not be so difficult to oust your father, particularly when he grows complacent in a year or so."
Elend gritted his teeth. Another revolution. Yet what Sazed said made sense. "For so long we've been worrying about the small scale." He glanced at Vin, feeling a surge of warmth and love. "Maybe it's time I started listening to the things she's been trying to tell me."
"Sazed," Elend said, a sudden thought occurring to him. "Do you think that I could convince the Terrace people to help us?"
"Perhaps, Your Majesty," Sazed said. "My prohibition against interfering, the one I have been ignoring, comes because I was given a different assignment by the Synod, not because we believe in avoiding all action. If you could convince the Synod that the future of the Terrace people will be benefited by having a strong ally in Luthadel, you may just be able to get yourself military aid from Terrace."
Elend nodded, thoughtful.
"Remember the lock and the key, Your Majesty," Sazed said, finishing off Vin's second wound. "In this case, leaving seems like the opposite of what you should do. However, if you look at the larger picture, you will see that it's precisely what you need to do."
Vin opened her eyes, looking up at him, smiling.
"We can do this, Elend. Come with me."
Elend stood for a moment. Lock and key. "All right," he said. "We'll leave as soon as Vin is able."
"She should be able to ride tomorrow," Sazed said. "You know what pewter can do for a body."
Elend nodded. "All right. I should have listened to you earlier, Vin. Besides, I've always wanted to see your homeland, Sazed. You can show it to us now."
"I will need to stay here, I fear," Sazed said. "I should leave for the south to continue my work there. Tyndall, however, can go with you. She has important information that needs to be passed on to my brethren, the Keepers." "It will need to be a small group," Vin said. "We'll have to outrun, or perhaps sneak past, Straff's men." "Just you three, I think," Sazed said. "Or perhaps one other person to help with watches while you sleep. Someone skilled in hunting and scouting. Lord Lesterbornes, perhaps?"
"Spook would be perfect," Elend said, nodding. "You're sure the other crew members will be safe in the city?"
"Of course they won't," Vin said, smiling. "But they're experts. They hid from the Lord Ruler. They'll be able to hide from Straff, particularly if they don't have to worry about keeping you safe."
"Then it is decided," Sazed said, standing.
"You two should try to rest well tonight, despite the recent change in your relationship. Can you walk, Lady Vin?"
"No need," Elend said, leaning down and picking her up. She wrapped her arms around him, though her grip was not tight, and he could see that her eyes were already drooping again. He smiled. Suddenly the world seemed a much simpler place. He would take some time and spend it on what was really important. Then, once he and Vin had sought help from the north, they could return. He actually looked forward to coming back and tackling their problems with renewed vigor. He held Vin tight, nodding goodnight to Sazed, then walking out toward his rooms. It seemed that everything had worked out fine in the end.
Sazed stood slowly, watching the two leave. He wondered what they would think of him when they heard of Luthadel's fall. At least they would have each other for support. His wedding blessing was the last gift he could give them. That, and their lives.
"How will history judge me for my lies?" he wondered. "What will it think of the Terracemen who took such a hand in politics? The Terracemen who would fabricate mythology to save the lives of his friends?"
The things he'd said about the well were, of course, falsehoods. If there was such a power, he had no idea where it was, nor what it would do. How history judged him would probably depend on what Elend and Vin did with their lives. Sazed could only hope that he had done the right thing. Watching them go, knowing that their youthful love would be spared,
he couldn't help but smile at his decision. With a sigh, he stooped down and gathered up his medical items. Then he retreated to his rooms to fabricate the map he had promised Vin and Elland. The End of Part 4. Part 5. Snow and Ash.
"He is accustomed to giving up his own will before the greater good, as he sees it."
49.
"You are a fool, Elland Venture," Tyndall snapped, arms folded, eyes wide with displeasure.
Elland pulled a strap tight on his saddle. Part of the wardrobe Tyndall had made for him included a black and silver riding uniform, and he wore this now, fingers snug within the leather gloves, and a dark cloak to keep off the ash.
"Are you listening to me?" Tyndall demanded. "You can't leave. Not now. Not when your people are in such danger."
"I'll protect them in another way," he said, checking on the pack horses. They were in the keep's covered way, used for arrivals and departures. Vin sat on her own horse, enveloped almost completely in her cloak, hands holding her reins steady. She had very little experience riding, but Elland refused to let her run. Pewter or no pewter, the wounds from her fight at the assembly still hadn't healed completely, not to mention the damage she'd taken the night before.
"Another way," Tyndall asked. "You should be with them. You're their king."
"No, I'm not," Elland snapped, turning toward the terrace woman. "They rejected me, Tyndall. Now I have to worry about more important events on a larger stage. They wanted a traditional king? Well, let them have my father. When I return from Terrace, perhaps they will have realized what they lost." Tyndall shook her head and stepped forward, speaking in a quiet voice.
"Terrace, Elland? You go north?"
"For her. You know why she wants to go there, don't you?" He paused.
"Ah, so you do know," Tyndall said. "What do you think of it, Elland? Don't tell me you believe these delusions. She thinks she's the hero of ages. She supposes that she'll find something in the mountains up there, some power, or perhaps some revelation that will transform her into a divinity."
Elland glanced at Vin. She looked down at the ground, hood down, still sitting quietly on her horse.
"She's trying to follow her master, Elland," Tyndall whispered. "The survivor became a god to these people, so she thinks she has to do the same."
Elland turned to Tyndall. "If that is what she truly believes, then I support her."
"You support her madness?" Tyndall demanded.
"Do not speak of my wife in that manner," Elland said, his commanding tone causing Tyndall to flinch. He swung up into the saddle.
"I trust her, Tyndall. Part of trust is belief."
Tyndall snorted.
"You can't possibly believe that she is some prophesied messiah, Elland. I know you. You're a scholar. You may have professed allegiance to the Church of the Survivor, but you don't believe in the supernatural any more than I do."
"I believe," he said firmly, "that Vin is my wife and that I love her. Anything important to her is important to me, and anything she believes has at least that much weight of truth to me. We are going north. We will return once we've released the power there."
"Fine," Tyndall said. "Then you will be remembered as a coward who abandoned his people."
"Leave us," Elland ordered, raising his finger and pointing toward the keep. Tyndall spun, stalking toward the doorway. As she passed it, she pointed at the supply table where she had previously placed a book-sized package, wrapped in brown paper, tied with a thick string.
"Says it wishes you to deliver this to the Keeper Synod. You'll find them in the city of Tathingdwin. Enjoy your exile, Elland Venture."
Then she left. Elland sighed, moving his horse over beside Vin's.
"Thank you," she said quietly.
"For what?"
"For what you said."
"I meant it, Vin," Elland said, reaching over to lay a hand on her shoulder.
"Tyndall might be right, you know," she said. Despite what Sazed said, I could be mad. Do you remember when I told you that I'd seen a spirit in the mists?
Ellen nodded slowly.
Well, I've seen it again, Vin said. It's like a ghost, formed from the patterns in mist. I see it all the time, watching me, following me. And I hear those rhythms in my head. Majestic, powerful thumpings, like alamantic pulses. Only I don't need bronze anymore to hear them.
Ellen squeezed her shoulder. I believe you, Vin. She looked up, reserved.
Do you, Ellen? Do you really?
I'm not sure, he admitted, but I'm trying very hard to. Either way, I think going north is the right thing to do.
She nodded slowly. That's enough, I think.
He smiled, turning back to the doorway. We're a spook. Vin shrugged beneath her cloak.
I assume Tyndall won't be coming with us, then?
Probably not, Ellen said, smiling.
How will we find our way to Terrace?
It won't be hard, Ellen said. We'll just follow the Imperial Canal to Tathingdon. He paused, thinking of the map Sazed had given them. It led straight into the Terrace Mountains. They'd have to get supplies in Tathingdon, and the snows would be high, but, well, that was a problem for another time.
Vin smiled, and Ellen walked over to pick up the package Tyndall had left.
It appeared to be a book of some sort. A few moments later, Spook arrived. He wore his soldier's uniform and had saddlebags slung over his shoulder. He nodded to Ellen, handed Vin a large bag, then moved to his own horse.
He looks nervous, Ellen thought, as the boy slung his bags over his horse.
What's in the bag? He asked, turning to Vin.
Pewter dust, she said. I think we might need it.
Are we ready? Spook asked, looking over at them. Ellen glanced at Vin, who nodded. I guess we...
Not quite yet, a new voice said. I'm not ready at all.
Ellen turned as Aurianne swept into the passage. She wore a rich brown and red riding skirt and had her hair tied up beneath a scarf.
Where'd she get that outfit? Ellen wondered.
Two servants followed her, bearing bundles. Aurianne paused, tapping her lip with a thoughtful expression.
I think I'm going to need a pack horse.
What are you doing? Vin demanded.
Going with you.
Aurianne said.
Breezy says I have to leave the city. He's a very silly man sometimes, but he can be quite stubborn. He spent the entire conversation soothing me, as if I couldn't recognize his touch by now.
Aurianne waved to one of the servants, who ran to get a stable hand.
We're going to be riding very hard, Ellen said. I'm not sure if you'll be able to keep up.
Aurianne rolled her eyes.
I rode all the way out here from the Western Dominance. I think I can manage. Besides, Vin is hurt, so you probably won't be going that fast.
We don't want you along, Vin said. We don't trust you, and we don't like you.
Ellen closed his eyes.
Dear blunt Vin.
Aurianne just twittered a laugh as the servant returned with two horses, then began to load one.
Silly Vin, she said. How can you say that after all we've shared?
Shared? Vin asked.
Aurianne, we went shopping together one time. And I felt we bonded quite well, Aurianne said. Why, we're practically sisters.
Vin gave the girl a flat stare.
Yes, Aurianne said, and you're definitely the older, boring sister.
She smiled sweetly, then swung easily up into her saddle, suggesting considerable horsemanship. One of the servants led her pack horse over, then tied the reins into place behind Aurianne's saddle.
All right, Ellen, dear, she said. I'm ready. Let's go.
Ellen glanced at Vin, who shook her head with a dark look.
You can leave me behind if you wish, Aurianne said, but I'll just follow and get into trouble, and then you'll have to come save me. And don't even try to pretend that you wouldn't.
Ellen sighed.
Very well, he said. Let's go. They made their way slowly through the city, Elland and Vin at the lead, Spook bringing their pack horses, Orianne riding to the side. Elland kept his head up, but that only let him see the faces that poked out of windows and doorways as he passed. Soon a small crowd was trailing them, and while he couldn't hear their whispers, he could imagine what they were saying. "The king. The king is abandoning us." He knew that many of them still couldn't understand that Lord Penrod held the throne. Elland glanced away from an alleyway where he saw many eyes watching him. There was a haunted fear in those eyes. He had expected to see accusations, but somehow their despondent acceptance was even more disheartening. They expected him to flee. They expected to be abandoned. He was one of the few rich enough and powerful enough to get away. Of course he'd run. He squeezed his own eyes shut, trying to force down his guilt. He wished that they could have left at night, sneaking out the pass wall as Ham's family had. However, it was important that Straff saw Elland and Vin leaving so that he understood he could take the city without attacking. "I'll be back," Elland promised the people. "I'll save you. For now, it's better if I leave." The broad doors of Tingate appeared ahead of them. Elland kicked his horse forward, speeding ahead of his silent wave of followers. The guards at the gate already had their orders. Elland gave them a nod, reining in his horse, and the men swung the doors open. Vin and the others joined him before the opening portal. "Lady Eyre?" one of the guards asked quietly. "Are you leaving too?" Vin looked to the side. "Peace," she said. "We're not abandoning you. We're going for help." The soldier smiled. How can he trust her so easily, Elland thought. Or is hope all he has left? Vin turned her horse around, facing the crowd of people, and she lowered her hood. "We will return," she promised. She didn't seem as nervous as she had before when dealing with people who revered her. Ever since last night, something has changed in her, Elland thought. As a group, the soldiers saluted them. Elland saluted back. Then he nodded to Vin. He led the way as they galloped out the gates, angling toward the northern highway, a path that would allow them to skirt just west of Straff's army. They hadn't gone far before a group of horsemen moved to intercept them. Elland rode low on his horse, sparing a glance for Spook and the pack horses. What caught Elland's attention, however, was Orianne. She rode with amazing proficiency, a look of determination on her face. She didn't seem the least bit nervous. To the side, Vin whipped her cloak back, bringing out a handful of coins. She flung them in the air, and they shot forward with a speed Elland had never seen, even from other allomancers. "Lord Ruler," he thought with shock as the coins zipped away, disappearing faster than he could track. Soldiers fell, and Elland barely heard the plinging of metal against metal over the sound of wind and hoofbeats. He rode directly through the center of the chaotic group of men, many of them down and dying. Arrows began to fall, but Vin scattered these without even waving a hand. She had opened the bag of pewter, he noticed, and was releasing the dust in a shower behind her as she rode, pushing some of it to the sides. "The next arrows won't have metal heads," Elland thought nervously. Soldiers were forming up behind, shouting. "I'll catch up," Vin said, then jumped off her horse. "Vin!" Elland yelled, turning his beast. Orianne and Spook shot past him, riding hard. Vin landed, and amazingly didn't even stumble as she began to run. She downed a vial of metal and looked toward the archers. Arrows flew. Elland cursed but kicked his horse into motion. There was little he could do now. He rode low, galloping as the arrows fell around him. One passed within inches of his head, falling to stick into the road. And then they stopped falling. He glanced backward, teeth gritted. Vin stood before a rising cloud of dust. The pewter dust, he thought. She's pushing on it, pushing the flakes along the ground, stirring up the dust and ash. A massive wave of dust, metal, and ash slammed into the archers, washing over them. It blew around the soldiers, making them curse and shield their eyes,
and some fell to the ground, holding their faces. Vin swung back onto her horse, then galloped away from the billowing mass of wind-borne particles. Elland slowed his horse, letting her catch up. The army was in chaos behind them, men giving orders, people scattering.
"Speed up," Vin said as she approached. "We're almost out of bowshot."
Soon they joined Olrianne and Spook.
"We aren't out of danger. My father could still decide to send pursuit."
But the soldiers couldn't have mistaken Vin. If Ellen's instincts were right, Straff would let them run. His prime target was Luthadel. He could go after Elland later. For now, he would simply be happy to see Vin leaving.
"Thank you kindly for the help getting out,"
Olrianne suddenly said, watching the army.
"I'll be going now."
With that, she veered her two horses away, angling toward a group of low hills to the west.
"What?"
Elland asked with surprise, pulling up next to Spook.
"Leave her," Vin said. "We don't have time."
Well, that solves one problem, Elland thought, turning his horse to the northern highway.
"Farewell, Luthadel. I'll be back for you later."
"Well, that solves one problem," Breeze noted, standing atop the city wall and watching Ellen's group disappear around a hillside. To the east, a large and still unexplained pillar of smoke rose from the Kolos camp. To the west, Straff's army was buzzing about, stirred by the escape. At first, Breeze had worried about Olrianne's safety, but then he'd realized that, enemy army notwithstanding, there was no safer place for her than beside Vin. As long as Olrianne didn't get too far away from the others, she would be safe. It was a quiet group that stood atop the wall with him, and for once, Breeze barely touched their emotions. Their solemnity seemed appropriate. The young Captain Demu stood beside the aging clubs, and the peaceful Sazed stood with Ham the warrior. Together they watched the seed of hope they'd cast to the winds. "Wait," Breeze said, frowning as he noticed something. "Wasn't Tyndall supposed to be with them?"
Sazed shook his head.
"She decided to stay."
"Why would she do that?" Breeze asked. "Didn't I hear her babbling something about not interfering in local disputes?"
Sazed shook his head.
"I do not know, Lord Breeze. She is a difficult woman to read."
"They all are," Clubs muttered.
Sazed smiled.
"Either way, it appears our friends have escaped."
"May the survivor protect them," Demu said quietly.
"Yes," Sazed said. "May he indeed."
Clubs snorted. Resting one arm on the battlements, he turned to eye Sazed with a gnarled face.
"Don't encourage him."
Demu flushed, then turned and walked away.
"What was that about?" Breeze asked curiously.
"The boy has been preaching to my soldiers," Club said. "Told him I didn't want his nonsense cluttering their minds."
"It is not nonsense, Lord Cladent," Sazed said. "It's faith."
"Do you honestly think," Club said, "that Kelsier is going to protect these people?"
Sazed wavered.
"They believe it, and that is..."
"No," Clubs interrupted, scowling. "That isn't enough, Terraceman. These people fool themselves by believing in the survivor."
"You believed in him," Sazed said.
Breeze was tempted to soothe him, make the argument less tense, but Sazed already seemed completely calm.
"You followed him? You believed in the survivor enough to overthrow the final empire?"
Clubs scowled.
"I don't like your ethics, Terraceman. I never have. Our crew, Kelsier's crew, fought to free this people because it was right."
"Because you believed it to be right," Sazed said.
"And what do you believe to be right, Terraceman?"
"That depends," Sazed said. "There are many different systems with many different worthy values."
Clubs nodded, then turned as if the argument were over.
"Wait, Clubs," Ham said. "Aren't you going to respond to that?" "He's said enough,"
Club said. His belief is situational. To him, even the Lord Ruler was a deity because people worshipped him, or were forced to worship him. Aren't I right, Terraceman?
In a way, Lord Cladent, Sazed said. Though the Lord Ruler might have been something of an exception.
But you still keep records and memories of the Steel Ministry's practices, don't you?
Ham asked.
Yes, Sazed admitted.
Situational, Club spat. At least that fool Damu had the sense to choose one thing to believe in.
Do not deride someone's faith simply because you do not share it, Lord Cladent, Sazed said quietly. Clubs snorted again.
It's all very easy for you, isn't it? He asked. Believing everything, never having to choose.
I would say, Sazed replied, that it is more difficult to believe as I do, for one must learn to be inclusionary and accepting.
Clubs waved a dismissive hand, turning to hobble toward the stairs.
Suit yourself. I have to go prepare my boys to die.
Sazed watched him go, frowning. Breeze gave him a soothing, taking away his self-consciousness for good measure.
Don't mind him, Saze, Ham said. We're all a little on edge lately.
Sazed nodded.
Still, he makes good points, ones I have never before had to face. Until this year, my duty was to collect, study, and remember. It is still very hard for me to consider setting one belief beneath another, even if that belief is based on a man that I know to have been quite mortal.
Ham shrugged.
Who knows? Maybe Kel is out there somewhere watching over us.
No, Breeze thought. If he were, we wouldn't have ended up here, waiting to die, locked in a city we were supposed to save.
Anyway, Ham said, I still want to know where that smoke is coming from.
Breeze glanced at the Koloss camp. The dark pillar was too centralized to be coming from cooking fires.
The tents?
Ham shook his head.
El said there were only a couple of tents. Far too few to make that much smoke. That fire has been burning for some time.
Breeze shook his head.
Doesn't really matter now, I guess.
Straff Venture coughed again, curling over in his chair. His arms were slick with sweat, his hands trembling. He wasn't getting better. At first he'd assumed that the chills were a side effect of his nervousness. He'd had a hard evening, sending assassins after Zane, then somehow escaping death at the insane Mistborn's hands. Yet during the night, Straff's shakes hadn't gotten better. They'd grown worse. They weren't just from nervousness. He must have a disease of some sort.
Your Majesty!
A voice called from outside. Straff straightened himself, trying to look as presentable as possible. Even so, the messenger paused as he entered the tent, apparently noting Straff's wan skin and tired eyes.
My lord, the messenger said.
Speak, man, Straff said curtly, trying to project a regality he didn't feel. Out with it.
Riders, my lord, the man said. They left the city.
What?
Straff said, throwing off his blanket and standing. He managed to stand upright despite a bout of dizziness.
Why wasn't I informed?
They passed quickly, my lord, the messenger said. We barely had time to send the interception crew.
You caught them, I assume,
Straff said, steadying himself on his chair.
Actually, they escaped, my lord, the messenger said slowly.
What?
Straff said, spinning in rage. The motion was too much. The dizziness returned, blackness creeping across his field of vision. He stumbled, catching himself on the chair, managing to collapse into it rather than onto the floor.
Send for the healer, he heard the messenger shout. The king is sick.
No, Straff thought groggily. No, this came too quickly. It can't be a disease.
Zane's last words. What had they been? A man shouldn't kill his father.
liar.
Amarantha, Straff croaked.
My lord?
A voice asked. Good. Someone was with him.
Amarantha, he said again. Send for her.
Your mistress, my lord?
Straff forced himself to remain conscious. As he sat, his vision and balance returned somewhat. One of his door guards was at his side. What was the man's name?
Grant.
Grant, Straff said, trying to sound commanding.
You must bring Amarantha to me. Now!
The soldier hesitated, then rushed from the room. Straff focused on his breathing. In and out. In and out. Zane was a snake. In and out. In and out. Zane hadn't wanted to use the knife. No, that was expected. In and out. But when had the poison come? Straff had been feeling ill the entire day before.
My lord?
Amarantha stood at the doorway. She had been beautiful once, before age had gotten to her, as it got to all of them. Childbirth destroyed a woman. So succulent she had been, with her firm breasts and smooth, unblemished skin.
Your mind is wandering, Straff told himself. Focus. I need antidote,
Straff forced out, focusing on the Amarantha of the now, the woman in her late 20s, the old yet still useful thing that kept him alive in the face of Zane's poisons.
Of course, my lord,
Amarantha said, walking over to his poison cabinet, getting out the necessary ingredients. Straff settled back, focusing on his breathing. Amarantha must have sensed his urgency, for she hadn't even tried to get him to bed. He watched her work, getting out her burner and ingredients.
He needed to find Zane.
She wasn't doing it the right way. Straff burned tin. The sudden flash of sensitivity nearly blinded him, even in the shade of his tent, and his aches and shivers became sharp and excruciating. But his mind cleared, as if he'd suddenly bathed in frigid water. Amarantha was preparing the wrong ingredients. Straff didn't know a great deal about the making of antidotes. He'd been forced to delegate this duty, instead focusing his efforts on learning to recognize the details, the scents, the tastes, the discolorations of poisons. Yet he had watched Amarantha prepare her catch-all antidote on numerous occasions, and she was doing it differently this time. He forced himself out of his chair, keeping tin flared, though it caused his eyes to water.
"What are you doing?"
he said, walking on unsteady feet toward her. Amarantha looked up, shocked. The guilt that flashed in her eyes was enough confirmation.
"What are you doing?"
Straff bellowed, fear giving him strength as he grabbed her by the shoulders, shaking her. He was weakened, but he was still much stronger than she. The woman looked down.
"Your antidote, my lord."
"You're making it the wrong way," Straff said.
"I thought you looked fatigued, so I might add something to help you stay awake."
Straff paused. The words seemed logical, though he was having trouble thinking. Then, looking down at the chagrined woman, he noticed something. His eyes enhanced beyond natural detail, he caught a slight glimpse of a bit of uncovered flesh beneath her bodice. He reached down and ripped off the side of her dress, exposing her skin. Her left breast, disgusting to him for it sagged a slight bit, was scarred and cut as if by a knife. None of the scars were fresh, but even in his addled state, Straff recognized Zane's handiwork.
"You're his lover,"
Straff said.
"It's your fault," Amarantha hissed. "You abandoned me. Once I aged and bore you a few children. Everyone told me you would, but yet I hoped."
Straff felt himself growing weak. Dizzy, he rested a hand on the wooden poisons cabinet.
"Yet,"
Amarantha said, tears on her cheeks.
"Why did you have to take Zane from me, too? What did you do to draw him off? To make him stop coming to me?"
"You let him poison me," Straff said, falling to one knee.
"Fool!"
Amarantha spat.
"He never poisoned you. Not a single time. Though at my request he often made you think that he did. And then each time you ran to me. You suspected everything Zane did, and yet you never once paused to think what was in the antidote I gave you.
It made me better, Straff mumbled.
That's what happens when you're addicted to a drug, Straff, Amaranta whispered. When you get it, you feel better. When you don't get it, you die.
Straff closed his eyes.
You're mine now, Straff, she said. I can make you.
Straff bellowed, gathering what strength he had and throwing himself at the woman. She cried in surprise as he tackled her, pushing her to the ground. Then she said nothing, for Straff's hands choked her windpipe. She struggled for a bit, but Straff weighed far more than she did. He'd intended to demand the antidote, to force her to save him, but he wasn't thinking clearly. His vision began to fuzz, his mind dim. By the time he regained his wits, Amaranta was blue and dead on the ground before him. He wasn't certain how long he'd been strangling her corpse. He rolled off her toward the open cabinet. On his knees, he reached up for the burner, but his shaking hands toppled it to the side, spilling hot liquid across the floor. Cursing to himself, he grabbed a flagon of unheated water and began to throw handfuls of herbs into it. He stayed away from the drawers that held the poisons, sticking to those that held antidotes. Yet there were many crossovers. Some things were poisonous in large doses, but could cure in smaller amounts. Most were addictive. He didn't have time to worry about that. He could feel the weakness in his limbs, and he could barely grab the handfuls of herbs. Bits of brown and red shook from his fingers as he dumped handful after handful into the mixture. One of these was the herb that she'd gotten him addicted to. Any one of the others might kill him. He wasn't even sure what the odds were. He drank the concoction anyway, gulping it down between choking gasps for air. Then let himself slip into unconsciousness.
I have no doubt that if Alendi reaches the Well of Ascension, he will take the power, and then, in the name of the presumed greater good, give it up.
50.
Are those the fellows you want, Lady Set?
Orianne scanned the valley, and the army it contained, then looked down at the bandit Hobart. He smiled eagerly. Or, well, he kind of smiled. Hobart had fewer teeth than he had fingers, and he was missing a couple of those. Orianne smiled back from atop her horse. She sat side saddle, reins held lightly in her fingers.
Yes, I do believe that is, Master Hobart.
Hobart looked back at his band of thugs, grinning. Orianne rioted them all a bit, reminding them how much they wanted her promised reward. Her father's army spread out before them in the distance. She had wandered for an entire day, traveling west, looking for it. But she'd been heading in the wrong direction. If she hadn't run afoul of Hobart's helpful little gang, she would have been forced to sleep outside. And that would have been rather unpleasant.
Come, Master Hobart, she said, moving her horse forward. Let's go and meet with my father.
The group followed happily, one of them leading her pack horse. There was a certain charm to simple men like Hobart's crew. They really only wanted three things, money, food, and sex. And they could usually use the first to get the other two. When she'd first run across this group, she'd been blessed by fortune, despite the fact that they had been running down a hillside in ambush, intent on robbing and raping her. Another charm about men like these was that they were rather inexperienced with allomancy. She kept a firm hold on their emotions as they rode down toward the camp. She didn't want them reaching any disappointing conclusions, such as ransoms are usually bigger than rewards. She couldn't control them completely, of course. She could only influence them. However, with men so base, it was fairly easy to read what was going on in their heads. It was amusing how quickly a little promise of wealth could turn brutes into near gentlemen. Of course, there wasn't much of a challenge in dealing with men like Hobart, either. No challenge. as there had been with Breezy. Now that had been fun. And rewarding, too. She doubted she'd ever find a man as aware of his emotions and as aware of the emotions of others as Breezy. Getting a man like him, a man so expert in allomancy, so determined that his age made him inappropriate for her, to love her, well, that had been a true accomplishment. Ah, Breezy, she thought as they passed out of the forest and onto the hillside before the army. Do any of your friends even understand what a noble man you are? They really didn't treat him well enough. Of course, that was to be expected. That was what Breezy wanted. People who underestimated you were easier to manipulate. Yes, Olrien understood that concept quite well, for there were a few things more quickly dismissed than a young, silly girl.
Halt!
A soldier said, riding up with an honor guard. They had swords drawn.
Step away from her, you!
Oh, honestly, Olrien thought, rolling her eyes. She rioted the group of soldiers, enhancing their sense of calmness. She didn't want any accidents.
Please, Captain, she said
as Hobart and his crew drew weapons, huddling around her uncertainly.
These men have rescued me from the savage wilderness and brought me safely home at much personal cost and danger.
Hobart nodded firmly, an action undermined just a bit as he wiped his nose on his sleeve. The soldier captain looked over the ash-stained, motley-clothed group of bandits, then frowned.
See that these men have a good meal, Captain, she said airily,
kicking her horse forward.
And give them space for the night. Hobart, I'll send your reward once I meet with my father.
Bandits and soldiers moved in behind her, and Olrien made sure to riot them both, enhancing their senses of trust. It was a tough sell for the soldiers, especially as the wind shifted, blowing the full stench of the bandit crew across them. Still, they all reached the camp without incident. The groups parted, Olrien giving her horses to an aide and calling for a page to warn her father that she'd returned. She dusted off her riding dress, then strode through camp, smiling pleasantly and looking forward to a bath and the other comforts, such as they were, that the army could provide. However, first, there were things she needed to attend to. Her father liked to spend evenings in his open-sided planning pavilion, and he sat there now, arguing with a messenger. He looked over as Olrien swished into the pavilion, smiling sweetly at Lords Galavan and Detour, her father's generals. Set sat on a high-legged chair so that he could get a good view of his table and its maps.
"Well, damn it," he said, "you are back."
Olrien smiled, wandering around his planning table, looking at the map. It detailed the supply lines back to the Western dominance. What she saw was not good.
"Rebellions back home, father?" she asked.
"And ruffians attacking my supply carts," Set said. "That boy Venture bribed them, I'm sure of it."
"Yes, he did," Olrien said. "But that's all pointless now. Did you miss me?"
She made sure to tug strongly on his sense of devotion. Set snorted, pulling at his beard.
"Fool of a girl," he said. "I should have left you home."
"So I could have fallen to your enemies when they raised a rebellion?" she asked. "We both know that Lord Yeoman was going to move the moment you pulled your armies out of the dominance."
"And I should have let that damn obligator have you."
Olrien gasped.
"Father! Yeoman would have held me for ransom. You know how terribly I wilt when I'm locked up."
Set glanced at her, and then, apparently despite himself, he started to chuckle.
"You'd have him feeding you gourmet foods before the day was through. Maybe I should have left you behind. Then at least I'd have known where you were, rather than worrying where you'd run off to next. You didn't bring that idiot Breeze back with you, did you?"
"Father," Olrien said, "Breezy is a good man."
"Good men die quickly in this world, Olrien," Set said. "I know. I've killed enough of them."
"Oh, yes," Olrien said. "You're very wise. and taking an aggressive stance against Luthadel had such a positive outcome, didn't it? Chased away with your tail between your legs? You'd be dead now if dear Vin had as little conscience as you.
That conscience didn't stop her from killing some 300 of my men, Set said.
She's a very confused young lady, Aurean said. Either way, I do feel obliged to remind you that I was right. You should have made an alliance with the Venture Boy instead of threatening him. That means you owe me 5 new dresses.
Set rubbed his forehead. This isn't a damn game, girl.
Fashion, father, is no game, Aurean said firmly. I can't very well enchant bandit troops into leading me safely home if I look like a street rat now, can I?
More bandits, Aurean? Set asked with a sigh. You know how long it took us to get rid of the last group?
Hobart's a wonderful man, Aurean said testily. Not to mention well-connected with the local thieving community. Give him some gold and some prostitutes, and you might just be able to talk him into helping you with those brigands that are attacking your supply lines.
Set paused, glancing at the map. Then he began to pull at his beard thoughtfully. Well, you're back, he finally said. Guess we'll have to take care of you. I suppose you want someone to carry a litter for you as we head home?
Actually, Aurean said, we're not going back to the Dominance. We're returning to Luthadel.
Set didn't immediately dismiss the comment. He could usually tell when she was being serious. Instead, he simply shook his head.
Luthadel holds nothing for us, Aurean.
We can't go back to the Dominance either, Aurean said. Our enemies are too strong, and some of them have allomancers. That's why we had to come here in the first place. We can't leave the area until we have either money or allies.
There's no money in Luthadel, Set said. I believe Venture when he says the Atium isn't there.
I agree, Aurean said. I searched that palace well. Never found a bit of the stuff. That means we need to leave here with friends, instead of money. Go back, wait for a battle to start, then help whichever side looks like it's going to win. They'll feel indebted to us. They might even decide to let us live.
Set stood quietly for a moment.
That's not going to help save your friend Breeze, Aurean. His faction is by far the weakest. Even teaming with the Venture Boy, I doubt we could beat Straff or those Kolos. Now without access to the city walls and plenty of time to prepare. If we go back, it will be to help your Breeze's enemies.
Aurean shrugged.
You can't help him if you're not there, father, she thought. They're going to lose anyway. If you are in the area, then there's a chance you'll end up helping Luthadel. A very small chance, Breeze. That's the best I can give you. I'm sorry.
Elend Venture awoke on their third day out of Luthadel, surprised at how rested he could feel after a night spent in a tent out in the wilderness. Of course, part of that might have been the company. Vin lay curled up beside him in their bedroll, her head resting against his chest. He would have expected her to be a light sleeper, considering how jumpy she was, but she seemed to feel comfortable sleeping beside him. She even seemed to become just a little less anxious when he put his arms around her. He looked down at her fondly, admiring the form of her face, the slight curl of her black hair. The cut on her cheek was almost invisible now, and she'd already pulled out the stitches. A constant low burn of pewter gave the body remarkable strength for recovery. She didn't even favor her right arm anymore, despite the cut shoulder, and her weakness from the fight seemed completely gone. She still hadn't given him much of an explanation regarding that night. She had fought Zane, who had apparently been Ellen's half-brother, and Tensoon the Chondra had left. Yet neither of those things seemed like they could have caused the distress in her he'd sensed when she'd come to him in his rooms. He didn't know if he'd ever get the answers he wanted, yet he was coming to realize that he could love her even if he didn't completely understand her. He bent down and kissed the top of her head. She immediately tensed, eyes opening. She sat up, exposing a bare torso, then glanced around their small tent. It was dimly lit with the light of dawn. Finally, she shook her head, looking over at him. "You're a bad influence on me."
"Oh?" he asked, smiling as he rested on one arm. Vin nodded, running a hand through her hair.
"You're making me get used to sleeping at night," she said. "Plus, I don't sleep in my clothing anymore."
"If you did, it would make things a little awkward."
"Yes," she said. "But what if we get attacked during the night? I'd have to fight them naked."
"I wouldn't mind watching that."
She gave him a flat stare, then reached for a shirt.
"You're having a bad influence on me, too, you know," he said as he watched her dress. She raised an eyebrow. "You're making me relax," he said, "and letting me stop worrying. I've been so tied up with things in the city lately that I'd forgotten what it was like to be an impolite recluse. Unfortunately, during our trip, I've had time to read not only one, but all three volumes of Trubeld's Arts of Scholarship."
Vin snorted, kneeling in the low tent as she pulled her belt tight. Then she crawled over to him. "I don't know how you read while riding," she said.
"Oh, it's quite easy, if you aren't afraid of horses."
"I'm not afraid of them," Vin said. "They just don't like me. They know I can outrun them, and that makes them surly."
"Oh, is that it?" Elland asked, smiling, pulling her over to straddle him.
She nodded, then leaned down to kiss him. She ended it after a moment, however, moving to stand. She swatted his hand away as he tried to pull her back down. "After all the trouble I took to get dressed?" she asked. "Besides, I'm hungry." He sighed, reclining back as she scampered out of the tent into the red morning sunlight. He lay for a moment, quietly remarking to himself on his fortune. He still wasn't sure how their relationship had worked out, or even why it made him so happy, but he was more than willing to enjoy the experience. Eventually, he looked over at his clothing. He had brought only one of his nice uniforms, along with the riding uniform, and he didn't want to wear either too often. He didn't have servants anymore to wash the ash out of his clothing. In fact, despite the tent's double flap, some ash had managed to work its way inside during the night. Now that they were out of the city, there were no workers to sweep the ash away, and it was getting everywhere. So he dressed in an outfit far more simple. A pair of riding trousers, not unlike the pants that Vin often wore, with a buttoning gray shirt and a dark jacket. He'd never been forced to ride long distances before. Carriages were generally preferred, but Vin and he were taking the trip relatively slowly. They had no real urgency. Straff's scouts hadn't followed them for long, and nobody was expecting them at their destination. They had time to ride leisurely, taking breaks, occasionally walking so that they wouldn't get too sore from riding. Outside, he found Vin stirring up the morning fire, and Spook caring for the horses. The young man had done some extensive traveling, and he knew how to tend horses, something that Elland was embarrassed to have never learned. Elland joined Vin at the fire pit. They sat for a few moments, Vin poking at the coals. She looked pensive.
"What?" Elland asked.
She glanced southward.
"I..."
Then she shook her head.
"It's nothing. We're going to need more wood."
She glanced to the side, toward where the axe lay beside the tent. The weapon flipped up into the air, shooting toward her blade first. She stepped to the side, snatching the handle as it passed between her and Elland. Then she stalked over to a fallen tree. She took two swings at it, then easily kicked it down and broke it in two.
"She has a way of making the rest of us feel a little redundant, doesn't she?"
Spook asked, stepping up beside Elland.
"At times," Elland said with a smile.
Spook shook his head.
"Whatever I see or hear, she can sense better, and she can fight whatever it is that she finds. Every time I come back to Luthadel, I just feel useless."
"Imagine being a regular person," Elland said. "At least you're an allomancer."
"Maybe," Spook said,
the sound of Vin chopping coming from the side.
but people respect you well. They just dismiss me.
I don't dismiss you, Spook.
Oh? The young man asked. When's the last time I did anything important for the crew?
3 days ago, Ellen said, when you agreed to come with Vin and me. You're not just here to tend horses, Spook. You're here because of your skills as a scout and a tin eye. Do you still think we're being followed?
Spook paused, then shrugged. I can't be sure. I think Straff's scouts turned back, but I keep catching sight of someone back there. I never get a good glimpse of them, though.
It's the mist spirit, Vin said, walking by and dumping an armload of wood beside the fire pit. It's chasing us.
Spook and Elland shared a look. Then Elland nodded, refusing to act on Spook's uncomfortable stare.
Well, as long as it stays out of our way, it's not a problem, right?
Vin shrugged.
I hope not. If you see it, though, call for me. The records say it can be dangerous.
All right, Elland said. We'll do that. Now, let's decide what to have for breakfast.
Straff woke up. That was his first surprise. He lay in bed, inside his tent, feeling like someone had picked him up and slammed him against the wall a few times. He groaned, sitting up. His body was free from bruises, but he ached, and his head was pounding. One of the army healers, a young man with a full beard and bulging eyes, sat beside his bed. The man studied Straff for a moment.
"You, my lord, should be dead," the young man said.
"I'm not," Straff said, sitting up. "Get me some tin."
A soldier approached with a metal vial. Straff downed it, then scowled at how dry and sore his throat was. He burned the tin only lightly. It made his wounds feel worse, but he had come to depend on the slight edge the enhanced senses gave him.
"How long?" he asked.
"Better part of 3 days, my lord," the healer said. "We weren't sure what you'd eaten or why. We thought about trying to get you to vomit, but it appeared that you'd taken the draft of your own choice, so..."
"You did well," Straff said, holding his arm up in front of him.
It still shook a bit, and he couldn't make it stop.
"Who is in charge of the army?"
"General Janarl," the healer said.
Straff nodded.
"Why hasn't he had me killed?"
The healer blinked in surprise, glancing at the soldiers.
"My lord," said Grant the soldier, "who would dare betray you? Any man who tried would end up dead in his tent. General Janarl was most worried about your safety."
"Of course," Straff realized with shock. "They don't know that Zane is gone. Why, if I did die, then everyone assumes that Zane would either take control himself or get revenge on those he thought responsible."
Straff laughed out loud, shocking those watching over him. Zane had tried to kill him, but had accidentally saved his life by sheer force of reputation.
"I beat you," Straff realized. "You're gone and I'm alive."
That didn't, of course, mean that Zane wouldn't return, but then again he might not. Perhaps, just maybe, Straff was rid of him forever.
"Ellen's Mistborn," Straff said suddenly.
"We've followed her for a while, my lord," Grant said. "But they got too far from the army, and Lord Janarl ordered the scouts back. It appears she's making for Terrace."
He frowned.
"Who else was with her?"
"We think your son Elland escaped as well," the soldier said. "But it could have been a decoy."
"Zane did it," Straff thought with shock. "He actually got rid of her. Unless it's a trick of some sort. But then..."
"The Kolos army?" Straff asked.
"There's been a lot of fighting in its ranks lately, sir," Grant said.
the beasts seem more restless.
Order our army to break camp, Straff said. Immediately. We're retreating back toward the northern dominance.
My lord? Grant said with shock. I think Lord Janarl is planning an assault, waiting only for your word. The city is weak, and their Mistborn is gone.
We're pulling back, Straff said, smiling. For a while, at least.
Let's see if this plan of yours works, Zane.
Sazed sat in a small kitchen alcove, hands on the table before him, a metallic ring glittering on each finger. They were small, for metal mines, but storing up ferrochemical attributes took time. It would take weeks to fill even a ring's worth of metal, and he barely had days. In fact, Sazed was surprised the Koloss had waited so long. 3 days. Not much time at all, but he suspected he would need every available edge in the approaching conflict. So far, he'd been able to store up a small amount of each attribute. Enough for a boost in an emergency once his other metal mines ran out. Clubs hobbled into the kitchen. He seemed a blur to Sazed. Even wearing his spectacles, to help compensate for the vision he was storing in a tin mind, it was difficult for him to see.
That's it, Clubs said, his voice muffled.
Another tin mind was taking Sazed's hearing.
They're finally gone.
Sazed paused for a moment, trying to decipher the comment. His thoughts moved as if through a thick, turgid soup, and it took him a moment to understand what Clubs had said.
They're gone. Straff's troops. They've withdrawn.